following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Hey, welcome back to Corolla Classics for part two of today's Saturday episode. Let's move on to our next clip. We're going to go all the way back to 2010 with Teresa Strasser and Mike Lynch.
Mike Lynch filling in for Paul Bryant for two episodes. This is the second one. Adam Carolla Show 382 featuring Greg Fitzsimmons, Gregory Levi, Teresa Strasser, and Mike Lynch. No Fitzsimmons in this portion. This is just the opening first half before Teresa actually departs, and then Greg kind of takes over for a different format, which of course will be in the Sunday show. So you want to check that out. Make sure you're subscribed. Until then, this is the opening of the show. No Fitz Dog, Teresa, News, Gregory Levi, Mike Lynch. Some old stories. Check it out.
And now, the knight in shining armor, coming to your emotional rescue, Adam Carolla.
Ugh, I hate that song so goddamn much. Oh, so it's, get it on, gotta get on, no charge, make it on, mandate, get it on. Mike Lynch sitting in for Paul Bryant one more day.
Hey, boys.
And there's Teresa Strasser, beautiful Teresa Strasser, of course. That emotional rescue song. There's some songs that are horrible, like that song, An American Woman, and other ones. But horrible, like Rod Stewart's Passion and stuff like that. Horrible with no ending. Like, it's one thing to just be a real piece of shit. I'm going to say the first nice thing I've ever said about Maneater in my life.
Okay.
It's not 4 minutes long. It's 3 minutes and 11 seconds. It feels like a lifetime, but it's technically probably under 4 minutes long. This fucking piece of shit never fucking ends. And then at the end, it doesn't end. It's like American Woman, you know? Go, gotta get away. Yeah, we get it. We're 9 minutes into your piece of shit. You don't like American chicks. Shut the fuck up and stay in Canada if you got that big a problem with them.
What did we do?
I know.
Don't we have a reputation in Europe for just putting out? Why is that bad?
This is worse. Yeah, I mean, it's like these are Canadians ranking on our chicks. Shut the fuck up.
How dare you?
How did that song get so much airplay over here? You know what I mean? Like, if I wrote a song called Mexican Chicks Are All Fat and Lazy, and I just went over to Mexico and went, well, why should... Oh, come on, this should be a hit.
Hey,
why is it not a hit?
El Cucuy, why aren't you playing Cucuy, my song?
How much you spend? Yeah, even worse. I'll just go to Canada, and I'll just go, hey, these Canadian bitches... They have bad skin and their pussy smell. Oh, come on. How about why am I not getting any spins?
The problem is they all have health care, so their vaginas are all nice and healthy. And their skin's clear.
There's the beginning of the song, too. There's a part that's tacked on. See, the part that didn't even get played on the radio half the time. American Woman, gonna mess your mind.
Mess your mind.
That's what he says, right?
Yeah.
She's gonna mess your mind. She's gonna
get
mess
it.
Your mind.
Said it twice.
Yeah.
I love they pull a crab like, oh no, it's a metaphor for Vietnam.
Really?
Yeah, that's what they'll say
Wait,
in interviews.
American women are going to get you in a quagmire that no one understands?
Let this song go. I was just saying how fucking long this piece of shit is and why we don't hate the Guess Who more.
508.
Oh my God. So you're saying Maneater is like you get T-boned by an 18-wheeler. You're dead. You're gone. But... This is
you on an anthill covered with syrup.
On the bright side, though, Adam, this did teach you how to spell American.
Yeah, I did learn how to spell Saturday by the Bay City Rollers. Actually taught me how to spell Saturday night. Sadly.
Have you learned any other great spelling?
Oh, yeah. I learned what a conjunction is and what their function is.
Yeah, what is it?
That's putting together... This goes through my fucking head when I have to write down the word Saturday night. I see guys in tartan spans or shorts or shants or whatever, fucking with mops for hair and running around. There was one chick. Leave this on. I like it. There was one chick in my junior high that was a fucking Bay City Rollers fanatic. She was basically red hair. Lily White wore the full-size Bay City Roller outfit, which was quite a bit larger than the ones that the boys actually wore. Think of Brian Posehn.
Yeah.
With a curly Sue kind of haircut and worse teeth. And being like 14. Well, here's the one problem. They never really talk about this. You know, they always talk about, well, there's the prom queen, and then there's the ugly girl, and then there's the fat chick and all that. But there's the one gargantuan chick. Oh. Every school has the huge girl.
Yeah, we had one.
You had a huge girl.
Yeah, we had one. Yeah,
we had.
Did yours?
Yeah, definitely.
They're usually named Debbie.
We had Lucy.
The one that Long Duck Dong was with at the prom.
Right,
the 16
right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. She always helps a guy lose his virginity. And the guy doesn't necessarily want anyone to know it was her.
Well, he doesn't have a choice.
She's on the softball team.
Yes.
She's big, not big and fat, just big. And not, yeah, she
not
can lose.
Not short, she's big.
No,
she's a linebacker.
Big woman. But it's always they could stand to lose a few pounds, too. I think there's a sort of, oh, fuck it, I'm 6'2". I'm 214 pounds. I'm 13 and a half. Who the fuck am I fucking? So fuck it. But one of these chicks had red hair, and her thing was, I'm not going to be the cute chick, and I'm not going to be the cheerleader, I'm not going to be the stoner, and I'm not going to be the cholo chick. I am going to be the Bay City Roller chick. And this is it. She would fucking...
That's a way to go.
She would wear those pants, or those shants, tartan shants in, and not that anyone want to fuck her anymore. Now it's like fucking a dude. From, I don't know where they were from, Ireland or Scotland?
I can't even picture them.
No, you got to get it. Someone pull up a picture of those goddamn Bay City Rollers. When you pull up a picture of the Bay City Rollers and then you picture this chick in 1978 wearing the Bay City Roller outfit, but being all of 250 pounds at 6'3", you really get a feel. And by the way...
All right, we should post this photo on
AppsFlow.com. You have to post it. They were wearing shants. They're the innovator, the pioneer of the shant.
Kevin Smith owes a great debt.
We all owe a great debt. Because we don't have to see Kevin Smith wearing Zeppelin jeans.
They look like Oompa Loompas.
Yeah, because they have vests and suspenders with the really long bell-bottom shant.
Yes, they had bell shants, which sounds like Bell's palsy. What's your aunt have again?
Bell Shantz.
Oh, I am
so... She's really struggling.
When Reagan was coming out against stem cell research,
yeah.
I was the one who was saying, you know what? What about the people who are suffering? And now with Bell Shantz, I'm so... Is there anything I can do?
Well, I mean, it's a degenerative thing,
yeah.
You know.
It's so
not,
sad.
There's nothing
and she
we
was
can
such
do.
A strong woman, too.
Yeah, when you see pictures of her before the Bell Shantz really took hold.
Mm.
You can barely recognize her now.
Mm. I hope, you know, Dr. Tartan is a specialist in Bell Shantz.
He only sees patients on Saturday night.
Dr. Tartan Cuffs. Of the Cuffs Institute.
This picture looks like what Middle Earth looked like in the 70s. Hobbiton had a disco face.
There is something Hobbit-like going on, too.
Yeah, they're wearing suspenders. I mean, you could only picture the 200-plus pound behemoth that was walking around Walter Reed.
Now, she has to have had somebody sew these pants, because you don't buy off the rack plaid shants in a size 22.
No.
You
don't get a husky shants off the rack that way. Not with the plaid cuff at the bottom. And two dudes seem to have their own, be sharing the same shants, but then there's the denim shant. I guess he's like the sporty spice or something.
Well, he's set apart. He's definitely the sporty shant.
Right.
Two of them have the white shants.
By the way, at a certain point, when you look at each other and everyone's sporting the shants and you're singing about Saturday Night, Saturday Night, don't you have to sort of just look at the guy next to you and go, I know this is going to last for more than 10 minutes. As a matter of fact, I hope it's not.
Do you think they ever turned to each other and went, this is the gayest thing we've ever
done? What the fuck are we doing? I thought rock bands were supposed to be like kind of scary.
Aren't we supposed to have like leather or something?
But can't there be something between Danzig and this? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's either got to be some guy fucking just screaming at you and, you know, holding a skull up and, you know, Gene Simmons shooting his tongue out and blood everywhere, or this.
Well, other than Sissa Saturday Night, do they have any other hits?
I think they did have another hit.
Because I recognize the band's name, but I would not know their work, and I had no idea they looked like that.
Well, this
those are all dudes?
I don't know. It's hard to tell from here. At the time, yes, they were all dudes, and there's five of them, and there's a sixth one that went to my junior high back in 1977, 78. It's a little more. This is from the best of.
This Bye Bye Baby. I don't know.
Anyway, oh. Scars up in the air. Come on.
This is
Bye Bye Baby, Baby. This is a remake, though.
Remember at the beginning of Fast Times at Ridgemont High where the voiceover explains that there's the Pat Benatar girls and then they show the 10 right, girls that all look
right,
like that?
Right.
But I never heard of the Bay City Roller girl.
Well, she was the only one, but you couldn't miss her. She was big as a house.
Carved out her own niche.
Carved out of granite. A sheer side of the cliff. Mount Rushmore of huge chicks. So I don't know what we were talking about, but we were talking about the one behemoth chick that's in every fucking high school and junior high, and I always feel sorry for that chick. The fat chick can lose weight.
Yeah.
Or date a black dude. But the huge chick, what's she got? Do you know what I mean?
That's hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You ponder on that, and I'm going to do a live read. Go to my PC. That's right. Go to mypc.com, brought to you by Citrix. How does it work? Well, you know how it works. You can go to your PC, sign up with these guys, and you can get to your work PC. You can get to your home PC. You don't have to be at home. You don't have to be anywhere other than if I have a place that has a hookup and has a computer, and you can access your work. And just think about that. I mean, think about what it's like to be on the road. Just go down to the business center, pop right onto your work computer, or like I said, pop onto the home computer. It works on a PC, works on a Mac, and they got a little special. Go to my PC free. You can try it free today. I have a 45-day free trial just for my listeners. So offers only available if you use the promo code Adam. Visit gotomypc.com and click on the try it free button. Remember to use the promo code Adam. 45 days free. All right, T-Bone.
Yeah.
How about we get right into the news?
Let's.
From the International News Center, next to Donnie's Mini Bikes, this is the news with Teresa Strasser.
Definitely going light today with news you quite possibly can't use. However, this may be, I don't know if this will be depressing, but TV Guide magazine every year tells you who the highest paid folks are in television.
Mm-hmm.
It's that time again.
Uh-huh. Oprah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in our horribly racist society, how does it work?
It works that when it comes to syndication, mm-hmm. Oprah makes $315 million
but
a year.
We're so racist and we hate women. We're like misogynist racist. What are we doing?
I'll tell you who we don't.
People, let's get to Mike. Where were you at the last white guy meeting? We're talking about ruling the world?
No, I was in the back.
I didn't see it.
You are?
No, I mean, well.
This is why. This is why people like Oprah are the highest paid people on TV.
I haven't been as committed as I need
Let's
to be.
Let's focus, white people. Let's go, white males. Come on now. We're losing our grip. Who's
Judge
next?
Judy.
Oh, another bitch. Possibly a Jew.
Almost certain.
Judy. Yeah,
Shineland isn't helping.
Oh, so now we got
and the judge.
We got a Negro and a Jew, and they're both witches. Oh, so horrible,
can
Mike.
You imagine?
When are we gonna fucking put a thumb in this dyke? Come on.
How did Ellen get in?
Dawson, where were you?
Ellen's also.
I was with Lynch.
I didn't see you at that meeting. Jesus Christ! I got Sandy and Donnie in here, and we got to fucking right this ship. Oh, it's fucking white males. Yeah.
Ellen's making $10 million. But don't worry, your buddy Jimmy Kimmel's on this list for syndicated.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, according to them, he's making $8
million. Really?
It's not so bad.
Jeez, I gotta borrow some money from that dude.
Right?
Where's he on that list?
Oprah, Judge Judy, Letterman, Leno, Conan, Ellen, and then Jimmy.
And oh, really? My best pal, and it's been the best part of doing
but
the show.
But I can tell you that
he's beating Chelsea Handler, who makes $3.5 million.
Yeah, but then she sells a shitload of books and sells out Carnegie Hall and all that shit. Makes a bunch of money that way.
I know.
What's the attraction there?
She really sells books. I'm so jealous.
It's weird.
I haven't read any of her books, but maybe they're really funny.
can't be that.
I tried to get her to blurb my book, and her people said she's taken a year off blurbing.
Oh, really?
All right. To be fair, she probably gets asked all the time.
I'm going to blurb Teresa's book, by the way.
It's going to be a hell of a blurb.
Mike, didn't I already tell you to blurb Teresa's book?
I sent it to you.
I sent it back.
Draft,
I said it was
but it
fine.
Has, it has boner in it. I can't have Penguin doesn't want boner on the cover.
Is that the name of your short editor?
No, it was a good blurb, minus boner.
Yeah, no, I didn't know if you said it was. You said great, but I didn't know if that meant approved it or thanks for the effort.
Jesus Christ, Mike, when I farm out some of my personal...
You agreed with his delightful appraisal of my...
He did a great blurb for me.
It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We'll just take out boner.
Did I tweak something on it or I just wrote great?
You just said great, thanks.
Great means good. Well, now you send it to Teresa.
Okay.
Let's get rid of boner.
Done and done. We'll get rid of boner and change it to uterus and we're all set.
Sure. Yeah, just change it to throbbing cock.
That sells books. Well, apparently Chelsea is so powerful in the world of books that even a blurb from her.
Is that how it works?
Yeah,
really?
Because my friend Stephanie Wilder Taylor got a blurb from her, and that really helped sell her book. Now Stephanie's blurbing my book, which is
wow.
Who's blurbing your book, Ace?
Jesus, I don't know if I'm doing that or not.
I don't think you need it.
Maybe I don't need it.
It's unknowns like me.
You'll self-blurb.
I'll self-blurb.
Are you going to auto-blurb?
Yeah, I did that through high school. Why not keep it going? Yeah, by the way, I think still some more book plates. We opened up another 2,500, so if you want to go check out my book, we'll get you those autograph book plates. Still, the deal still stands. Speaking of that, I think Gregory Levi, who's an author, is on the blower right now.
Oh.
Yes? I have his paperwork in front of me. Gregory?
Hi.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Trying to find the piece of paper.
I found it. He's written a book, Shut Up, I'm Talking, and Other Diplomacy Lessons I Learned in the Israeli Government.
Ah, yeah. What other diplomacy lessons did you learn in the
Israeli
government?
There are all sort of variations on the theme of Shut Up, I'm Talking. Sometimes it's just like, let's do bad things because... no one's looking, or you know, I should talk on three phones at once. That's the most efficient way to have a good conversation.
Love
all kinds of
phones.
Useful stuff.
Oh, really?
Oh, man, they were early adopters to the cell phone.
What's going on with the Israelis?
I have no idea. I mean, even when I was in the prime minister's office, I really had no idea. That's the bottom line as far as I'm concerned. It's a confusing, frustrating situation.
Well, I mean. I'll give you my Israeli take.
Okay.
oh boy, here we go. Everyone hates me, but generally, I've known a handful of them in my life, and I find them annoying. Now, one of them is I had a horrible cunt Israeli neighbor that drove me nuts, and I didn't know enough friendly Israeli people to turn me around the corner.
Right, right.
But my feeling was if any of those people in that country are anything like this cunt who lives next to me, I never want to go there as long as I goddamn live.
Well, normally I'd say that's a sampling of one. However, I've traveled to the Middle East on a couple of occasions as a reporter, and Gregory will back me up. There is a cultural thing. In Israel, where people are very direct. Right, Gregory?
That's one way to put it. I mean, that's how they put it. But
that's how they
put it as rude, but yeah.
Right. All right. So it's a cultural thing. Yeah. She used to come over to my house and say, like, hey, stop this and do that and come over here and come fix this. And I'd be like, wow, I don't even know you and I'm not fucking you.
It takes a minute to get used to. I mean, everyone's in the army. It
took me 6 years and I fucking moved.
Everyone has to go in the army. And I
think maybe that's it.
I mean, the army does it. One of the things that in my book is, I mean, this ridiculous thing. I was in a cab. The guy's telling me this horrible joke. Doesn't make any sense. I told him I don't get it. I tell him twice. So he gives up, and he's like, okay, you walk from here.
You walk.
Joke.
Wow.
But wait a second, though. I mean, that's confusing because are we cheap or rude?
You walk from here. Wow.
You know what I mean? But, like he gave up a fare.
Yeah, he gave up a fare just because he didn't like the fact that I didn't get his joke.
But here's what, let Teresa and I demonstrate how what you have to do with Israeli cab drivers when they're telling jokes that don't connect or make any sense, right?
Yeah.
All right. Now, Teresa, you'll know exactly what to do here.
Okay.
And it's anything but say, I don't get it, repeat again.
Okay.
It's a man. He's a huge endowment. Uh-huh. It's between legs. And right. He comes home, you know, to his wife. And he says to her, hey, what's all the trouble?
That's good.
Yeah, see, that's all you do. You don't.
This
go,
has been a wonderful reenactment.
You don't go. I don't understand. Tell the
wait.
Again.
What happens to his wife? Wait, what did
yeah,
the wife
say? Yeah,
so
you say? Don't do that. You just laugh it up.
Just laugh it up.
And keep it laughing.
I would do a subtle laugh.
That lesson, yeah.
Just a small one, so he doesn't feel like he should tell you another joke.
Right, right. Oh yeah, you don't want to laugh it up too much. It'll serve you up another one.
Yeah, he just kept telling me the same one again and again, and it didn't make sense.
And after a while, he kicked you out and told you to walk.
Yeah.
I love that story.
That was one of my favorite, I mean, or least favorite things. But I mean, my book's full of that kind of thing, except in the government as well. Like, I was sent to the General Assembly of the UN on behalf of the Israeli government, and they didn't tell me there was a vote.
Mm.
And they're like, okay, and the UN people say, okay, there's going to be a vote. You know, how is Israel voting? I'm 25 at the time, not even Israeli, don't know how to vote.
Well, how
I call the Israelis, can't get through to them. They're just like, well, figure it out, basically.
How did
I
you end up?
Vote.
How did you end up there?
At the Israeli government, you mean?
Yeah.
I was in law school in New York, incredibly bored.
Hold on, a Jew in New York in law school?
What's that?
Wow.
Fish out of water story.
Yeah. So you're in New York law school, yeah.
Yeah, I applied for a bunch of internships. I applied to the Israeli consulate as one. Mm-hmm. I walk in there. The guy doesn't seem to know how I got to his desk.
Right.
And instead he's like, well, you know, we have this position opening up, head speechwriter for the Israeli ambassador to the UN. Maybe you want to do that instead of an internship. And next thing I know, I'm doing that.
Wow. And so how long did you live in Israel?
So I mean, the government for about 2.5 years, but only the last year was in Israel. It was in New York at the UN, and then they sent me off to work for Ariel Sharon in Israel for the last year.
And what do you think as far as the Palestinians and the Israel, and I mean, is this ever? I don't see any end to it ever, because I think everyone wants to yell at each other and everyone wants to battle. And I know when you get a bar filled with guys that like to fight, there's always going to be a bar fight.
I agree completely. I see no hope.
Good. I wish we could just get
bar.
Just don't go to that fucking bar. And we should all get more realistic about this, which is. I definitely blame the Palestinians more than I blame the Israelis, although at a certain point, as I always say, if you have a fucking psychopath roommate who's a drug addict and you wake up and he's holding a machete over you and he's sweating profusely, just move out. And they go, yeah, but I got the apartment. It's my security deposit. Like, so what?
It's
just fucking move out.
To that. I mean, they put up a fence and like, oh, the fence is on my land. It's like neighbors fighting.
Yes, they're just a whole region of fucking people that want to go at it. And by the way, when you go to regions of the world where they don't want to go at it, magically no one's going at it. They don't go at it with their neighbors in regions of the world where they don't want to go at it. But in places where they do want to go at it, they constantly go at it. And the only part that's confusing me is, why are we confused by this?
Yeah, and we just keep trying for a solution.
It's not going to happen, right? Yeah. No.
I'm still fixated on how this Gregory just walks into the Israeli embassy and becomes a speechwriter for Ariel Sharon.
Yeah, me too. It's been 5 years. I'm still confused.
What was the first one you did? You remember they tell you, like, well, here's you know, he's talking.
Start with a joke.
Start with a joke. He's talking.
Start with a joke, yeah. They love it.
Always start, learning.
How many Palestinians does it take to screw in a light bulb?
Well, by the time I was sick of it, like towards the end, I was trying to insert Seinfeld references into Sharon's speeches.
Ooh.
Right. Just to occupy myself. I was just getting bored and frustrated. So I put in like references to Seinfeld stuff.
Did you succeed in doing that?
I kept trying. They kept getting edited out, not because they noticed that I was doing that, but because they just didn't like that section. Eventually, and I got a few into the final draft of a speech. Sharon approved one, which had two references to the Festivus episode.
Wow.
We will not give up the Golan Heights.
But never actually given.
And blah,
so
blah,
that's
blah.
My big regret.
Wow.
Yeah, you tried.
And
I did try, yeah.
Now, what would it take to move back to Israel and live there full time?
Oh, my God. I can't even
really?
Bad than what it would take.
What's so wrong with it? What's so bad about it? Because you see the travel brochures, and, you know, hey, see a Galilee.
It's a great place
right.
to visit. Like, don't get me wrong. As a tourist, I totally recommend it to people. It's fun. It's like the nightlife in Tel Aviv is really rocking, yeah. The beach. But, you know, it's a place to live. From a North American perspective, there's just such a cultural divide. I can't imagine ever doing that again.
And, again, the main cultural thing is just sort of speaking your mind, being a little bit pushy, getting in your grill.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit pushy and speaking your mind. Yeah, or just like very impromptu, like that vote thing. Just figure out how to vote. In fact, after I wrote about that, Israeli journalists, one of them, said to me in a print piece, like an interview kind of thing, that, oh, Israelis wouldn't find that story funny at all. They would say, like, oh, he's just a wimp. He's complaining that he was asked to just vote.
Right.
There's kind of a machismo thing.
Yeah, totally.
What is it about our domesticated North American Jew where they're so docile? It's like it's like the honeybees versus the Africanized killer bees.
That's what it is.
They look exactly the same, but yet they're so fucking hostile and they sting the shit out of you.
That's totally what it is. I mean, part of it is the Israelis culturally and historically did it on purpose. They wanted to reject that diaspora weakness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because it was post-Holocaust.
Yeah.
And it was
important. But I kind of like the diaspora weakness.
You do?
I kind of enjoy it rather than, like, they made me once, I did, like, combat training randomly, because, of course, every speechwriter should have that.
Of course.
Sure, you never know.
And I did, they made me do push-ups with a loaded gun with no safety in my pocket, and then kicked my hands out from me, so I landed, like, on my chest with the gun.
Talk about
my
Jew
groin.
Ass.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why am I doing this as a speechwriter?
Well, let me toss in Jew ass. Let me toss in this other possibly offensive stereotype that we're talking about. I've thrown this out many times. I have this theory about many of the gays, and it's the same thing that chicks do, which is, look, nobody wants to go downstairs and get a shitload of boxes and move them upstairs. I don't want to do it. You don't want to do it. Mike doesn't want to do it. But if you're a chick, oftentimes, you'll get out of that detail. Like, I'm not going to say to my wife, hey, go down to the back of my truck and grab that 60-pound sack of concrete, bring it to the garage. I won't do that. I had a gay assistant for a while, and I wouldn't do it to him either, right. Because he essentially positioned himself as a woman.
Right.
Like, he said, I don't want to do that shit, and I'm not going to do that shit. And if you ever told him, like, hey, why don't you go down and wash your car or something, like, you know, it's just like, he was like a chick, not only from, he was a chick from Gone with the Wind. It wasn't even a modern woman.
He was having a fainting spell.
I know. Like, say, yeah, he was like fanning himself.
Vaping.
He got the vapors. And I have, you know, writing in Hollywood, you work with a bunch of Jewish guys, and it's like, a lot of these guys would be like, you go like, come on, we got to jump, put the jumper cables on the car. And they go, I'm Jewish. I don't know how to do that shit. For Christ's sake, my dad's an orthodontist. Get this shit fuck out of here.
If you need your teeth straightened, I can help you out.
And there's a lot of like, it's true that if you look at the Gentile dude and you look at the Jewish dude and somebody needs a bump start or help me change a flat or do some moving, I'm not going to ask my buddy Dan Dratch to help me move. It'd be nothing but complaining and whining in my back, and you couldn't get Jeff Ross to give you a fucking hand. You just look at the fucking Gentile guy, played a little high school football, and you go, hey, buddy, how about this weekend? You come to my house and move. So do you think there's an element of that? Because I do think the gays play it up a little to get out of work.
I mean, I certainly play it up. I mean, I want to definitely do the weak diaspora juice so as to get out of doing anything.
Oh, I love your candor.
But I think the Israelis reject that consciously, and they're like, yeah, you know, I love moving concrete on the weekend back for it. I do it all weekend. You know, they want to reject that.
And with the loaded gun in your pocket and no safety, they made you do push-ups and they kicked your hand
out. They made fun of safeties. I asked, where's the safety on this gun? Not like I know anything about guns.
It's macho. But Gregory...
I like the idea that he just sounds like Woody Allen every time he complains.
No matter what he says.
I know. I mean, that's how they saw me.
He was the Woody Allen in the middle of a bunch of crazy Israelis.
I'm a landlocked Hebrew. But now, back me up here, though. Israeli women are phenomenal looking.
I think so, certainly. And then, I mean, the whole population, I think, they're actually better looking somehow, even though we have this.
They're way better looking than the diaspora Jew.
Oh, no. I've known some that live out here, and they're just super rugged, hardy. They're always the short guy with the big forearms who you don't want to fuck with.
And the women always seem to have, like, tan skin and green eyes.
Yeah. That's a good combo.
I mean, we had like the same grandparents, but somehow something happened.
Well, basically, they pulled you out of the field and put you into the house, and you got soft. What happened. You need to get out there and shuck some sugar cane.
Were you dating any Israelis while you were living there?
No. I brought my American girlfriend with me, so that wasn't an option.
I'm sure that made them love you that much more. Wow. The name of the book is called Shut Up, I'm Talking, and Other Diplomacy Lessons I Learned in the Israeli Government. Gregory, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on. I'm a big fan.
Oh, well, come see us in person next time you're out in L.A.
I'd love to.
Thanks, Gregory.
All right. Take care.
Good times.
Probably doesn't like to fly because you catch cold. You're exposed to new germs.
Yeah, I guess he's probably out on the East Coast. I didn't know if it was Gregory Levy or
Levi. He's doing one of these crazy spellings. Occasionally, there's like, you go, are you Levine? Levi, I don't know what, but I know you're a Jew, so who are you kidding?
Right.
Spell it L-E-V-Y or L-E-V-I, and let's all move on.
Well, if you want us to pronounce it right on the show. Anyway, I like the cut of Gregory's jib because, you know, as a xenophobe, I like to point out the differences in cultures constantly, and that's cool. And listen, that's all right. You got to do a little judging every once in a while.
Oh, it's very difficult to find somebody to defend Israelis, even Israelis.
The thing about me and Israelis, really honestly, is I'm not wild about the folks, just because of my experience living next to one tremendous cunt that ruined it for all of Israel. But I vehemently defend their right to be where they are, and if somebody said you have to leave all your money to a charity and it's either going to be the Palestinian one or the Israeli one, I'm all about their cause. And that is 100% Palestinians. It's 100% their fault, and they could get along if the Palestinians would just get along, and I don't think that's going to happen in our lifetime, but I completely support their cause and would never want to live next door to one.
Well, by the way, now that we've decided they don't make good neighbors.
Wait a minute. I used to babysit Israeli boys.
Really?
Revi and Ronnie.
There's always crazy
and
names.
And the dad's name was Izzy.
Yeah, it's always doo-doo.
And the craziest thing in the world is Israeli guys, like real Israeli guys, hit puberty about 9 and a half or 10.
Get a mustache by 12.
It's a I swear to God, it's like I'm 12, 13 years old, living in North Hollywood. I'm babysitting little Revi and Ronnie. They're the cutest little brown-eyed little kids. One of them's 6 and the other one's 7 or 8. And they're just sweet little, they're sweet little kids. And then fucking smash cut to like 12, 14 years later, I run into one of them. He's driving a Corvette. He's wearing like a members only jacket, the hair coming out of the chest, Italian horn, hanging from his thing. Shirt, undone to the navel, got the lacquer on the vet and the bimbo in the seat. It's like, what the fuck happened?
Well, he became westernized, yeah. Right? But here's a few things just on behalf of the Israelis. They're badasses.
Yes.
They all, women and men, go into the army.
Love
their
that.
Time.
Love that story.
Their fucking airline, El Al, oh my, you have to fly that once in your lifetime. They have not had an incident on their airline.
I thought it was El Al. Did we move?
El Al?
Did we start moving El Al to El Al? Like Khan and Can and that kind of stuff?
I just always call it El Al. Oh. I could be wrong. Like Aleph means A.
Halal.
So what the badass in terms of their security?
Oh my, yeah, they have not had an incident.
I think we all appreciate that. Like, why do we simultaneously, sort of frown on it and then respect it?
I love it. They take you aside and they start grilling you, and they're looking at your body language.
But we would never
trained.
Do. But we would never put up with that kind of profiling here in the States. Like we'd be against it immediately, but yet we all love it when it works somewhere else. Or we sort of brag about it. They've never had a...
They're very highly trained. These aren't like what you see at American airports. These are highly trained.
How dare you attack the good men and women that protect this country?
Well, God bless them, but they're worried if you have 3 ounces of moisturizer.
Well, the beauty, as I always say, and as I just experienced once again, is the wild inconsistency. Like the 10 times I go through Burbank Airport with my shit just thrown in my toiletry bag, and then the 11th time when I get the, why isn't it a Ziploc baggie? That's our policy. No, I don't know it's your fucking policy. Let me help you define policy. Something you consistently fucking do, which they don't do. I mean, I was saying to Mike August, who admittedly is pretty out of it, on the way back from Phoenix, you know, I always get popped for not having the zip, you know, the baggie with the Ziploc on it. He's right. Like, what are you talking about? As you know, your toiletries in the baggie with the Ziploc outside of the toiletry bag. I don't know what you're talking about. I said, Mike, you fly all the time. You must have heard this. It's been nonstop back and forth, like 5 years of get it out, put it in, oh, you don't need it, or you need it on the way in, but you don't need it on the way out. It's just, and he's like, now, again, he's fucking thick as a brick, but he's like, it's never happened to me. And I'm like, how could it have never happened to you? It's happened to me 10 times.
But wherever August goes, he just steals the hotel toiletries.
Oh, maybe that's
he doesn't
it.
Need to bring
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
Him.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So let's get back to profiling.
Oh yeah,
T-Bone, they got some news.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
From the International.
Oh
news
yeah,
Center,
we already went through
next
this.
To Donnie's mini bikes.
Anyway.
Oh yeah, we got
this,
yeah more.
I was gonna tell you, I got more news.
This is true.
These LL security, they pull you out of the line and then they stand really close to you and then they interview you. But you can tell they're not really listening to your answers. They're like watching what your pupils are doing.
Really.
And your body language, and it's terrifying. Like, why are you visiting? Who are you visiting?
Wow.
I'm a journalist. I'm covering the opening of Jordan to tourism. Do you have any relatives there?
Really?
I've got an aunt. What's her name? Are you bringing her anything?
I got that from a fat coos over when we were going into Canada. But this was for no reason. And I just got fucking reamed on the way in, and I ended up giving her a hard time, and she ended up like pulling me out and punishing me and all that kind of stuff. That's a Canadian border kind of thing, but they did the same thing over there. What?
Start grilling you?
It was just weird. But I've told the story before, but it bears repeating. I said, everyone said to me, when you go into Canada and they ask you what you're here for, say pleasure. Because if you say business, it's going to be a big hassle.
Right.
And it was me and Jimmy going in there, and we sold the Man Show or something to some Canadian station. And we had like 2 days of like going around and doing interviews at Canadian stations and everything. But they don't pay you. You know, so we're like, they're in business, but it wasn't really business. Like, there's no money changing hands or
right.
anything. So I just said, I'm here on pleasure. And she said, all right, let me check your briefcase. And she pulled the briefcase out, and it had an itinerary that my, like, whatever, manager put up. It's like 8 a.m., good morning, Canada, then Tuesday, you know, and then through, you know, the whole entire afternoon of press, and then the next day, and she said, hey, pleasure, huh? This looks like a lot of business
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, I see you're going
to
be doing How Do You Do Halifax.
Right, and I said, yeah, well, look, I'm not getting paid for those shows. And she said, well, what do you mean you're not getting paid? You're doing all these TV shows, all these radio shows, you're not getting paid? I said, listen, when Michael J. Fox does The Tonight Show, they don't pay him. She said, who's Michael J. Fox? I said, are you, what? What? Who's Michael J. Fox? I said, you don't know who?
He's only the most famous Canadian next to Neil Young.
I was like, I had to stop my argument. This is 10 years ago. She didn't know Michael J. Fox was. I was like, well, how come you don't know Michael J. Fox? She's like, sir? I'm like, but never saw him. All right.
Well, yeah, back to top TV earners. Hugh Laurie, when it comes to drama, making $400,000 an episode.
Mm-hmm. So now he's doing
House.
Yeah, but I mean, he's doing, well, what do they do? Do they do 22 of those things? They do 12 of those things?
Ah, that's a good question.
I think they do.
Isn't it full season 26? I don't know.
So if you're doing 20 episodes, you're making $8 million or something like that?
That's not bad.
Yeah, you can buy in that.
Yeah. Larry Fishburne makes $375 per episode of CSI.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, that big a cast.
Yeah, I guess if you get a big movie star on a show that makes a lot of money.
Couldn't have tossed his fucking daughter $50,000 not to do the porn?
Well, word is they did try to buy out they tried to make a deal with Vivid. No deal.
I tried that with my dad when I was 22.
It didn't work.
Dad, I'm going to start doing gay porn and unless you pony over some big bucks.
Oh, like, great.
Who are you and how'd you get into my home?
Yeah, hello?
The other big earners, Matt Lauer, as it pertains to news, he makes $16 million for the Today Show.
Jesus, fuck.
I know. Katie Couric is making $15 million.
What the?
At CBS.
Matt Lauer. I don't know. I know all the ladies love him, and he's very, like, agreeable and whatever, but what does he really bring? I don't know. Does he bring that much to the table?
Well, does Elliot Spitzer bring $500,000 worth of news background to CNN? That's what he's making. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between $500,000 and $16 million.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Big money.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about anchors is mainly they're doing light lifting, but when there's a breaking story, you got to be pretty good.
No, I know. And you see that when there's a breaking story, and you also see it when they have to make a little chit-chat, a little small talk going into commercial break, where they usually just mask it with fake laughter because they really can't think of anything to say. And that's when you realize how fucking bad they are.
Right. And that separates a guy like Matt Lauer can do the awkward weather into kidnapped baby found.
Uh-huh.
He can make that transition, and that's why he.
Well, that's why you need really heavy glasses. Because I learned this from Cronkite.
Yeah.
Cronkite had glasses that weighed like 9 pounds.
Right.
And he would just do that Gemini rocket is lost. It's in the aura. The Vietnam conflict continues on. President Kennedy has been shot in Texas. And it's like, as long as you have big, thick glasses to fuck around with, it buys you a little time.
God, I think you're right, because Brian Gumbel works that.
Yeah, it's like Carrot Top's trunk. You're not standing out there nude with your lob. Larry King. Like, you can do that. Put it on. What do we got here? Take it off. Rub temples.
That's your transition.
The vice president has been shot. You know, like, and it's back in. Robert Kennedy's been shot in Los Angeles. As long as you put the glasses on and off all the time, but they have to be like 8 pounds.
Now, what about McKay, the sports guy? He had a report on
his
that comb massacre.
Over. His comb over. With, okay. Because
he was famous that. For the live.
They're all
reporting.
Dead. They're all gone.
That's it.
They're all dead. All the Jews, the Germans, they're all
dead. Speaking of Israelis.
Everyone's dead. They're all dead.
Here's one.
By the way, the fucking Germans, when it comes to exterminating 6 million Jews, no problemo. Saving 8, no can do. Really? All I guess you guys become bumbling idiots when it comes to saving 8 Jews, but you're fucking expert.
Suddenly you're
experts
in these...
Experts at killing 6 million?
You're in these weird track suits that...
Yeah. Why are you guys turning into imbeciles all of a sudden?
Bumbling at killing people?
Yeah, I thought you guys were great at that.
So it used to be so efficient.
What happened? Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I'm not feeling like the same effort was put...
I feel like they phoned in that rescue.
Yeah. Like, it's probably one of these things where it's like, you know, they called the, you know, German police unit, and it's like a group of Olympians have been...
taken hostage.
Been taken hostage. Oh, which ones? The Jews. Hey, Manny, you want to order out? Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Listen, we'll get there when we get there. If we get there on an empty stomach, we're going to be in a bad mood.
Let me just get a little strudel.
Yeah.
Stop by Hans's strudel hut.
We got a plan for that tarmac all worked out.
Do we have disguises, or are we just going
to... We'll put some tracksuits on.
Like,
and then,
over?
We'll go to the airport. We'll spread some dudes out. We'll start shooting in the general direction of the helicopter.
Fritz, how are we going to hide these giant, giant guns?
Track bag. I don't know.
Put them in a
I'm
track
hungry.
Bag? Me too.
And then it's like, well, what if one of the shots missed the terrorist and hits one of the Jews? Good one. good one, Hamrick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
It's not a waste of a bullet.
Yeah.
This story out of Florida. While visiting Epcot Center, a Pennsylvania woman alleges that a Disney employee dressed as Donald Duck grabbed her breast and molested her after she sought an autograph. After the alleged groping, Donald Duck made gestures, apparently with his snowy white hands, indicating he had done something wrong, according to a lawsuit filed last month by April Magillon. The woman from Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, 27, was visiting Epcot with her children and fiancé in May of 2008 when the incident reportedly occurred.
Upper Darby, good name for TSV. Really? Upper Darby. They just see Disneyland, they just see money, right? But fucking anytime you have a job where you have to look through your mouth again.
And what are the chances that the guy who wants to be in the Donald Duck outfit at Disneyland is straight?
Right. It's probably that same stewardess who told that chick to fuck off and then pulled the emergency hand.
Oh, that guy?
Yeah. The flight attendants.
America's hero.
Yeah, America's
Everyone
hero.
Everyone can fuck off. I'm done.
Yeah.
Your language is offensive.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Should we take some calls? Or should we do a little more news?
Well, wait for Fitzsimmons. We'll do it when Fitzsimmons comes in.
Okay. A juror in the Bronx was arrested for stealing a fellow juror's credit card while they were serving on a burglary trial involving a stolen credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Mercado swiped John Postrick's card and charged more than $500 worth of shoes and clothing at stores near the courthouse. The 20-year-old now faces up to 4 years in jail on theft charges.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is supposed to be a jury of your peers.
Right.
So in this case, I mean, this is a really an exact peer.
Right.
Somebody would steal somebody else's credit card.
Yeah. Yeah. Identity theft, credit card theft. I wouldn't even know it, really. There could be 10 guys assuming my identity. I have no fucking idea. By the way, when credit cards do the suspicious stuff, like was that suspicious activity on the account?
Like me buying the kayak?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, they just look for stuff that's like an anomaly? Are they looking for an amount spent? Or are they just looking for shit? Like, no way Teresa Strasser's never bought a crossbow and a case of chewing tobacco ever.
We should just try it and see, like,
see
if
what
Amex
it's going to take. And
there's
probably an embarrassing version of this, too. Like, ooh, Corolla spent $80 on his old lady for flowers. That's a let's go red flag that one.
Somebody stole his black Amex.
Hey, looks like Corolla bought a teddy bear and not from the airport. So let's go ahead and get a unit rolled on that. Someone's obviously gotten hold of his card.
Mr. Corolla, we have a record here that says you went to Amazon.com and bought the Great Gatsby.
Yeah, oh, that was not me.
In my imagination, there's some sort of computer program that's able to determine aberrant activity.
Like the LL.
Yeah.
Investigators just staring at the pupil. But this time it's not your pupil, it's your computer monitor, man.
Right. Well, they say one way of finding terrorists is to look at unusual bank activity.
Yeah. Well, it's everything. I mean, yeah. I mean, look, the 19 guys that brought down the Twin Towers were almost sort of begging to be popped. You know, hey, we're going to go to flight school in Florida and we're only interested in taking off the plane, not landing. But like, first off, hey, fuck nut terrorists. At least pretend like you want to land the plane. I mean, that's insulting to our intelligence, but I guess we're that fucking dumb that we never really, questioned it or red flagged it. But there was tons and tons of news reports and tons of intelligence. There's tons of intelligence that was gathered saying, they're guys who want to fly a plane into our buildings. They want to use commercial aircraft. But I mean, there was a ton of, we have people spread out and we also have countries we're friendly with. We're on, good terms with England and Germany and France and places like that. And they would hear things. And they would hear things like, all right, one of our agents heard that these guys wanted to use commercial aircraft to take down buildings. And they actually said New York and Washington, D.C., and we just didn't fucking roll on anything. I mean, to me, that's the A, huge ball dropped. B, the part where we then talk about doing that now and people have difficulty with that is insane to me. 1 ounce of that, somebody being a fucking not just asleep at the switch before 9/11 could have prevented this. It was very preventable. I mean, they were skilled and they were crazy and they were everything else and brazen and everything else, but they were completely stoppable. This was
it so looks like that on this side, but I think there's so much noise and so much intelligence being gathered by different arms of the government that no one could put it together.
Well, I mean you can say that about tumors and you can say that about cars, planes that crash because they weren't tested correctly. But I mean, but it is our job. That's what these people do. I mean, we pay a shitload in taxes and we have the FBI and the CIA and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of their job.
Right. Well, I was reading, and speaking of banking patterns, I was reading in Super Freakonomics that they can't really give away the details, but there are certain patterns that are specific to terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
About how their money goes through the banking system. And if you look specifically for those things, And let's just say they happen to be from certain countries and they're male of certain ages. Mm-hmm. You can really narrow it down. Yes, you're profiling completely. You're totally and completely profiling.
Right.
However, it might help you if you think that somebody is suspicious to note that they're getting large sums of money from certain other countries. They aren't. There's no way that they could have earned that money.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things to look for, just like, you know, my kayak.
Yes. Good name for TV. one smallish hole in the middle. You know?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the baby didn't come out that way, so.
Yeah, that's why it's still smallish.
It's intact. Mm-hmm. Mexico's Supreme Court ruled that all 31 states...
Get out of here. They got a Supreme Court?
Yeah.
I know they got a burrito Supreme, but a Supreme Court?
I do.
Does that Supreme Court have a lot of sour cream on it?
Extra guacamole.
I got to get the Supreme Court next time I'm down at Taco Bell.
They ruled that all 31 states must recognize same-sex marriages performed in the capital, though its decision does not force those states to begin marrying gay couples in their territory. It was a 9-2 decision. The tribunal cited an article of the Constitution requiring states to recognize legal contracts drawn up elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It did not specify what degree of recognition must be granted to same-sex couples.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good
news and bad news, gays. Yeah. We're going to be recognized. Bad news is we're moving to Tijuana.
Ooh. Mexico's same-sex marriage law, enacted in March, extends to wedded gay couples the right to adopt children, to jointly apply for bank loans, to inherit wealth, and to be covered by their spouse's insurance policies. Some of those may end up applying only in the capital.
Hmm. Well, I agree with the burrito. I mean, that's
Mexican Supreme Court.
I just want sour cream. That's all I want.
It made
extra
you hungry.
Sour cream and chives. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That should be the whole campaign next time one of these gay marriage things comes up in the States. Like, listen, Mexico's doing it.
Yeah, Mexico sobered up long enough to enact this. You guys, come on. You want Mexico to be the fucking tip of the progressive spear? You want to be behind Mexico on some social, progressive social agenda? Really, people? Canada, all right. I'll give you Canada, but come on now. Yeah, that would be my argument. Look, come on. Mexico's doing it.
Let's not fall asleep on the cactus of freedom.
Right. Thank you.
More you
a nap
know.
On it. How drunk was that guy that he took take a nap on a cactus?
That's why it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Four sisters delivered babies within 4 days of each other.
Four sisters?
Yeah. One Chicago family received an exciting gift this past weekend when four sisters each delivered babies within days of each other. Three of the sisters, Lillian, 27, Sabi, 29, and Leslie, 24, gave birth to healthy babies on August 6th and 7th. And then the fourth sister, Heidi, delivered a baby in California 2 days later.
This is some sort of new record. You know what they always have out here, although maybe you've gotten tired of it, but there'd always be that news story, the first child born in
the new year,
and they'd show the super fat family sitting there looking very uncomfortable, and everyone's like out of breath, but born at 12:03 a.m., whatever,
right.
In January. And they always make a big deal over it, although all you did was sort of fuck at the right time and shit a kid out at the right time.
Yeah.
But I'd like a little follow-up.
What happens to that first kid?
I'd like to know what kind of greatness this kid has gone on to.
Well, January is a good time to be born, if you read Malcolm Gladwell.
Really?
Yeah, because you'll be ahead of the curve. Like, if you play sports,
right,
and you're five.
Sure.
You know the difference between a four-year-old and a five-year-old? It's huge. So if you're born in January and you're starting that year, you'll be well ahead, and then you'll get more practice time, and you'll be on the all-star team, and then you'll get even better.
Yeah.
And then you'll be in the NHL.
It's huge. Like I said, my buddy Ray is a behemoth anyway, just literally was held back a grade or something. And he played varsity in the 10th grade, and me and Chris, his buddies, played varsity in the 11th grade. And by the time, you know, those guys dropped out and got thrown out of school and everything, but he would have gotten 3 years of varsity ball, and he would have gotten a free ride to a school, and everyone else had to sort of play on the 10th grade team because we were a year off. We all put on 40 pounds of muscle in between being 15 and a half and 16 and a half. But, yeah.
It makes a huge difference.
I'm fucking holding my son back like seven grades.
I agree.
He's going to be in his mid-30s going out for that freshman team.
He will dominate
those little peewees whose nads haven't even dropped yet. Yeah. Now, T-Bone, I know we're running a little bit late, and I know you got a sitter and a sick kid and all that stuff. So would you like to be excused?
Yeah, you want to swap me out for Greg, or should I do one last story with Greg?
All right. Well, either way, you're the one with the sick kid and the clock, so you tell me.
Yeah, I have just enough time for this last story.
All right, well, let's do one last one, and then we'll swap you out.
Sounds good. I'll make it concise. I'll try. In 1924, the editors of Vogue published advice for the great rising mass so they'd know how to behave properly in public.
Now, what year?
1924.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought you'd like this, you know, because we often talk about how people dress on the airplane and
yeah,
have no manners.
Yeah.
Here are some of the things addressed by the editors of Vogue in 1924.
Well, like I was saying before, the guy from the Arizona Club Beef.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the guy's wearing a big fucking pornographic T-shirt and shants and a hat that's askew and weird DG tennis shoes. And
now, if I had said to Beef, the podcaster from Tempe, well-known podcaster with his sidekick laugh track.
Right.
If I had said, Beef, is it always necessary to change one's clothes for dinner?
Oh. He'd have to talk to Sugar Mama and see if there's a new T-shirt he could wear around the dinner table, but... Nah, I would have been no, definitely
Vogue
not.
Said, it is always well to do so, if possible. The mere fact of dressing for dinner makes for good appetite, as well as for a clean, well-bred, self-respecting appearance. Not to do so is lazy and provincial.
Why does it make for a good appetite? Like, I really burned some calories pulling on these new slacks. But yes, I agree. You see, I think this is the problem we're facing in society, which is we have this super progressive thing. And the idea of if looking in the rearview mirror, well, that's just a bunch of segregation and Vietnam and, you know, women being whatever held back. And I agree. Let's not bring any of that back. But there were a couple of notions that we should have stuck out. And the civility part, this kind of one of them.
Well, what are some examples of inappropriate dressing, according to the Vogue editors of the 1920s?
Making bacon, sweat hoodie.
The wearing of satin or light suede high-heeled slippers in muddy or snowy streets.
Mm.
Gay, elaborate clothes for office work. Or too exaggerated fashions anywhere. Those are all signs of inappropriate dressing.
Uh-huh. So you couldn't be you couldn't dress too flamboyantly at work. And you basically can't wear slippers to buy lotto tickets.
Right. Don't go outside in your slippers, essentially, right. Especially if it's snowing. Then they have a list of words that you should not mispronounce.
Uh-huh.
Your Majesty is not on here.
Uh-huh.
One should...
I bet nuclear is not going to be on.
One should say... No, not advertisement, not advertisement.
Uh-huh.
One should say theater, not theater.
Uh-huh.
One should say envelope, not envelope.
Oh, really?
No, not envelope, except as a verb.
I always say envelope for some reason.
One should say incomparable, not incomparable.
Oh, man, I didn't know that one.
One should say refined, not refined.
Oh, yeah.
That seems to make sense.
Yeah.
One should say interesting, not interesting.
Uh-huh.
You get the idea. Now, lastly.
Yeah, ironically, not interested in that last one.
Does a lady wear a hat for lunch in her own house?
Mmm.
Not interested.
Do her guests keep their hats on? They do in all cosmopolitan places. That
they
is
do.
The news.
Keep your hat on.
In all cosmopolitan places. If you're out in the country visiting your cousins, then maybe you don't. I can't believe I'm going to miss Greg Fitzsimmons. I'm so sad.
Well,
love him.
Hug him on the way out.
I will.
We'll bring Fitzsimmons in. And yeah, come on in, Greg.
Pearl Classics is brought to you by LifeLock. Black Friday is one of the biggest shopping days and one of the biggest opportunities for scammers. Some of the most common scams include buying a gift online that never arrives, sellers demanding payment with gift cards, fake shopping websites, and fake delivery notifications. You got to be careful about this. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day we put our information at risk on the internet. In an instant, a cyber criminal could steal what's yours, sometimes even harm your finances, your credit, your reputation. But good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. And if they detect your information that's potentially been compromised, they'll send you an alert. You got to check it out. It's LifeLock. Tell them, Gio.
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can help protect what's yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
That clip from August of 2010. Surprised Mike Lynch didn't get his job back. Going in for Bob Ryan.
So those eggs were, somebody asked me to do it, I'd be like, nah, man, you're not saddling me with that gig again. I'm now the half book writer. I don't want to be the sound drops guy.
So Mike Lynch, still very involved in the podcast. He writes every single intro joke that we do, even to this day. He does live on the East Coast, so we don't get to interact with him in person very much or even at all, really. But he does email us every day. He pitches new stories to Gina. And he co-writes Adam's books. And he's helping out with a lot of Adam's other projects as well. He's very heavily involved in this world. So I miss him here is what I'm trying to say. And famously, he was the original drops guy. And then he went on his honeymoon. Bob Bryan filled in and Mike was never invited back to do the drops. So
yeah, Bob Bryan was pretty slick with it in the space. I don't know if he was doing it intentionally or not, but everybody was really up his butt with praise that week. And he was deserved.
Look,
it was pretty good.
He must have killed. So there you go. That's the history of Mike Lynch and Bald Brian. And now, Gio, I have a honeymoon coming up. So if I come back and Kaylin's sitting in my chair,
I think there's like four people that'll assassinate Kaylin first. So. I don't think you have to worry about that one. You have to worry about whoever kills Kaylin and is sitting in the chair after it. Yeah.
Well. Anyway, that was a great clip. And
come back, Gary has an eye patch and just like knife wounds all over his arms.
Yeah, what the hell happened here? Well, I was gone.
It's like, I'm the producer now.
Go ahead. Have at it, guys. Good luck. Now, let's get going with our final clip of the day. This is from April of 2018. Let's play some Rotten Tomatoes.
Adam Carolla Show, 2298. It's the 124th installment of the Rotten Tomatoes game. Wow. Jordan Klepper was the guest. Gina Grad and Brian Bishop. Jordan's not in this portion. April of 2018. It's a wrestler-themed round of the Rotten Tomatoes game. Check it out.
Listen to that noise, that's a high falsetto voice, that can only mean one thing, and you can feel it. Got some names of flicks, and the gang makes their picks, guessing if it's rotten or fresh. If they guess it exactly, we'll get a bonus five. It's the Rotten Tomatoes game, you know how we do it. Give me the Rotten Tomatoes game. Now it's time to play it.
All right, this Rotten Tomatoes game is in reflection of the fact that yesterday was WrestleMania. I know Gina pay-per-viewed it.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So each of these movies will have one professional wrestler in them.
Mm.
Not always a bad sign.
We begin in a dystopian 1997.
Yeah.
Where a major war between the United States and the Soviet Union has come to an end. The island of Manhattan has been converted into a maximum security prison. The president's taken hostage. Snake Plissken's got to save him. Ox Baker is the wrestler in the movie with Kurt Russell from 1981. John Carpenter's Escape from New York.
Ooh.
Now, tough movie, because it was like kind of groundbreaking and interesting and blah, 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 and campy and everything else. Doesn't have to be, critics hate it. It was fun. Snake Plissken was fun and everything.
It's a classic today.
Yeah.
And this was the original, right? This is not the...
He escaped from L.A.
Yeah.
He did what all businesses are doing from Los Angeles.
Seeking tax shelter.
Right. Wow, really tough. Really tough on this one. You can throw out the 80s and the 90s, I feel.
Is it a cult classic, though? Do the people love it enough that the critics have listened?
It's a weird... Carpenter probably, had some street cred and this, that, and the other.
What year was the movie made?
In 97.
No, it was set in 97.
No, it was
set
in 97. Made in 81.
81, set in 97.
Look how big Kurt is. Doesn't he look like
that's a... the wrestler.
Oh,
there's a wrestler in every movie.
Wait.
That is the wrestler, but he does look like Kurt Russell.
Does he look just like Kurt
Russell? I was thinking the same thing.
Okay, he has a lot of that, but I did the wrestling math because of the wrestling preamble as well.
Looking at a picture of Kurt Russell's eyes. Holy shit. And I'm wrong.
All right. So, I like it when Brian and guys in general do the sing-songy I do that with my wife a lot. Or I go like, yeah, the reason I'm talking about picking up Olga is because we were talking about picking up Olga, and that's why I'm talking about this Rotten Tomatoes game
is themed around wrestlers.
So thus,
wouldn't it make sense that the star of the movie?
No, actually, wouldn't at all, because no one ever showed the poster.
If you see a guy in swim trunks with his shirt off,
the good chance that man.
Is a wrestler.
He looks just
although it is true that...
Oh, the guy who looks exactly like a professional wrestler.
Right. All right.
Anyway.
What did the critics say? I give it some camp appeal. Is it fresh? 67.
Ooh. I hedged my bets. I said 77.
I said 73.
Escape from New York is fresh. That's 86%.
Oh.
Holy good gravy. I would never have anticipated that the critics who have it at 86% and the people at 77, this would have been one of those movies I would have bet everything I owned that the critics, from the 60s, or the fans, like, I have no idea why the average critics have this one at 86 and the fans are a good bit lower.
My only thought is that it part of its appeal is it's pretty rough around the edges. I mean, it's pretty the production values aren't super high. Mm. So I'm wondering if audiences, you know, since Rotten Tomatoes has come out and however long it's been, you know, 10 years or whatever, audiences are used to more sophisticated.
Top critics have to drop down quite a bit. They can't.
Be surprised higher. Critics love this movie.
I guess they did. Expat, I'll figure it out.
Anyway. 71.
Told you.
Oh.
Yeah, they dropped way down. Lower. Yeah. Wow.
All right.
It's a weird one. Yeah. All right. Insanely high.
Next up, set in 19th century China, starring RZA, settles in a jungle village, becomes a blacksmith, and he starts fashioning some weapons of war, but war gets out of hand, so he transforms himself into a human weapon. The wrestler is Dave Bautista. The movie is 2012's The Man with the Iron Fists.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Quentin Tarantino presents.
I heard this is really good.
I had no idea. I've never seen it. Never have any interest in these kinds of movies. He's also in Guardians of the Galaxy guy, right? I have nowhere to go from Quentin Tarantino presented it. I like Quentin Tarantino. Brian heard it was good, but he does that sometimes.
I do that, throw you off sometimes.
Did you see the tagline underneath? Iron Fist, you can't spell Kung Fu without F and U.
Wow. Hold
that's on. A tell.
Chris, check that.
There's no way.
Okay.
I've nowhere to go on this, so for that, I don't think they loved it. I go 59.
Ooh.
I went 18. The often they'll throw,
oh, didn't they love it, though, Brian?
No, they hated it. They often throw Quentin Tarantino Presents on crappy movies and kind of put them out.
I listen to Brian
don't
when he
ever
goes,
do
when
that.
He does that. I listen. I'm so naive.
He's such a jerk.
I could be wrong. I don't know the answer.
Okay. 50.
The Man with the Iron Fists is rotten at 49%.
Right. Oh.
We're pretty close.
All right. Wow. 50. All right. Audience had it at 40. Here we go.
Next up, in the decades since his fiance was killed, an Army Ranger, Green Beret, and Navy SEAL rolled into one, played by Will Forte. He swore off fighting crime, instead rocks a mullet as a man of peace. The wrestlers are Chris Jericho, Kane, MVP, and Mark Henry, alongside Kristen Wiig. 2010's MacGruber.
Ryan Phillippe. Well, Powers Booth. You guys seen this movie?
Yeah.
This is a very underrated movie.
I agree.
Very funny.
Lots of fun. Lots of fun, but did the... how the critics work with this stuff?
SNL spinoff, so it can be very hit or miss.
Yeah. The ultimate tool, it says. It's funny. It's funny. This is like rock star, you know what I mean? Like underrated, funny, but do the critics... You know, I hate it when somebody does something like that, and then the critics are like, oh, 72... Yeah. Like, oh, you go make a comedy then that has a laugh in every scene. And then
so many great moments.
Give me the C+. That's what I hate, especially in comedy.
Oh, Val Kilmer's in this as the bad guy. Miss, this man will literally rape you. I'd run away fast as I can. This is my niece.
I got to believe that the critics were not as great as we would like them to be on this one. 77.
79.
Okay, this is where I win it all or lose it all. I'm only basing this on that these movies tend to not do well with critics, in my opinion. I said 32.
Oh, no.
MacGruber is rotten. 47%.
Oh, thank you very much.
Brian, once again, sucked me in. Because I thought this was funny, too.
And the audience score is pissing me off. 34?
This movie is ridiculous. I like this movie. I'll watch it right now.
No points for liking it.
Let's watch it right now.
34 with the audience. What, by the way, as an audience member, what are you expecting? Yes. What do you expect when you go? And this did what it said it was going to do. Oh, man. Gina, power move.
Got to stop listening to both of you.
Next up, any game where we have WWE wrestlers, it would be inconceivable if we did not include Andre the Giant in 1987's The Princess Bride.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all love this movie. I watched...
Inconceivable!
In the documentary, I learned that he was too weak. Like, in his back was in too bad a shape and stuff. There's a part where he, like, caught the princess coming out. Like, the fight scenes and stuff. Like, he really couldn't do it, which is sad, poetic, and somewhat comical that the biggest guy in the set couldn't physically do the stuff. Yeah. All right. Everyone loves this movie. Nobody doesn't love this movie. It is insane that there's always a percentage of critics that are like, it's below 60%. It's a D. It's insane.
I actually got to see this in the theater at the TCM Festival last year. They showed this with, you know, Mel Brooks was there and Cary Elwes was there on the big screen, because I think we were too young to see it on the big screen when it came out. It was fantastic.
It's a beautiful movie.
Holds up. It was amazing.
All right. So I'm going to go 96% and be angry at the 4% that gave it a thumbs down.
Because I'm playing from way behind, I went big. Perfect 100.
Mm. Yeah, I think I went low. I said 93.
You're all in the ballpark. The Princess Bride is certified fresh at 97%.
Damn.
What did you say, Adam?
96.
Oh.
Yeah.
And finally, the first of
the series.
Who
didn't like that movie?
That's my whole thing. There's three ass wipes, or maybe six ass wipes, depending on, or maybe nine, or depending on how many hundreds chimed in. Who just like, no.
What's
and again,
a
the bar's 60%.
Yeah.
Like, I could see three people saying 97%. I don't know. I got a more like 90.
Sure.
But this is 59.
It's good for kids.
Two critics. The leads are vacuous, the absurdities sometimes forced and obvious. And then somebody from Variety said, based on William Goldman's novel, this is a postmodern fairy tale that challenges and affirms the conventions of a genre that may not be flexible enough to support such horseplay.
Ridiculous.
I don't even know what that
means. There's no valid criticism.
But here's the deal. In my world, that person is relieved of their post. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, hey, Mr. Guy who works for Variety, who does this for a living, we can no longer have you do your job. You're the referee in the boxing match. You had it for the guy who clearly lost. And we need you pulled out of the mix because we can't rely on you. Yeah. We were looking for you for opinions. We want to know whether to see this movie or not.
We're gauging our viewing of you.
What the population will think.
Your calibration is so far gone. Or you have some sort of agenda that I'm unaware of. But either way, you must be removed.
Agreed.
Okay.
Okay, and finally, Tobey Maguire stars as Peter Parker, who gets bit by a spider and gets superpowers like being able to kiss Kirsten Dunst upside down in the rain. The macho man, Randy Savage, joins the cast in 2002's Spider-Man.
The original.
Yes, the Sam Raimi.
Macho Man's dead, right?
He is dead.
Just the first one.
Yeah.
Or the first one on this one. I remember this one being good and people liked it and all. Oh, and he fought the Macho Man in the cage. That was a fun scene. All right. So it's a Spider-Man. You know, it's a comic book movie. They can't give it 95%, even though it was perfectly well made and lots of action. Gina's got the lead. She's going to try to play it down the middle. I got to play it down, but playing it down the middle sometimes just means going where you think they're going to go. I'm going to say 88%.
Oh. 85.
81.
Spider-Man is certified fresh at 89%.
No!
Now, I get 5 points off for missing it by 1 point twice in a row, right?
That's your little
I got to check
rule.
The rule book.
Oh, man.
You could have used those 10 points.
Boy,
man.
That would have been epic, yeah. All right, here we go.
Dang.
All right. Well, just a reminder that the lowest score of all time belongs to Gina Grad.
Thank
that score
you.
Was 4.
Thank
unbeatable. conceivable beatable.
That did not happen.
You don't say.
Adam Carolla, your score, 61.
All right.
Put you on the podium.
Yeah. Take that podium.
And you don't even need that boost of a few inches to be a little bit higher than Bald Brian. Brian. 79, yeah. But where does that put Gina?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, it puts her smack dab in the middle of the winning circle because she's got 41. Congratulations, Gina Grad.
I do best when it's not my genre. I feel real good about this. Because you guys have feelings tied up in it.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, you're better off not seeing MacGruber for this game.
Yeah.
Because MacGruber is a funny movie.
It absolutely is. It's again. I'm I don't like the fact that they can do all these movies of a serious nature, and they've become these like Oscar darlings. And how tough it is to be funny and consistent for 95 minutes, and then they kind of turn their nose up at it and go.
I think the example I can see Brian giving, at least the recent example, is something like Call Me By Your Name, being the press darling, the critical darling, and not your favorite. And I agree.
Let's put this way, MacGruber was better.
Yeah.
I will say this. If somebody said to me, look, you either create a movie that is a comedy, and you got to get it above 70 in that comedy, or it'll be of serious nature and you got to be above 85, I'd go, give me the serious one. If it's my two kids' lives on the line, I'll do this. Yeah. Find me the gay guy. Find me the guy with who's been shunned and bullied at school or whatever. Then we'll find a relationship between the guy who was bullied at school and the gay guy who's struggling to come out of the closet or whatever. I'll put all the pieces together. It'll be a darling.
Paint by numbers.
Comedy, you know, like I said, MacGruber, Rockstar, something, or not Rockstar, but...
Yeah, Popstar.
Popstar. Sorry, Rockstar is another one.
There was a Rockstar, it wasn't funny.
Right, yeah. Right. But Popstar, funny, it's just, you're just fighting every critic just has like their arms folded going, impress me.
Yeah. Gina, you'd like MacGruber. At one point, the bad guys ambush him with like machine guns, him and Ryan Phillippe, who's on the same team, and he grabs Ryan Phillippe and puts him in front as a human shield, and they riddle him with bullets, and then they leave. And Ryan Phillippe's like, how'd you know I was wearing a bulletproof vest? He's like, I obviously could fit.
If both of you think it's funny, I'm sure I'd think it's funny.
It is.
Roll Classics is brought to you by Geico, because if you own or rent, then of course it's hard work. So, let's make it easy for you by bundling those policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a great thing because you already got so much going on. So this is what you do. You go to geico.com, you get a quote, and see just how much you could save. How easy is that?
Well, Christoph, it's pretty easy. It's Geico easy.
Yes, it sure is. Go to geico.com today. That's geico.com. And that was a wrestler-themed round of the Rotten Tomatoes game. I love our themes, man. They just get more creative. Go on. I mean,
tomorrow's Rotten Tomatoes game because we didn't play any last week. I decided to double it up. It's going to be a shocking one. It's the start of a new era.
I love it. All right. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm looking at it. It's when Dennis Miller started showing.
Yeah, it's the first one.
It sure is. For any new listeners out there, don't ever bet on Dennis Miller. All right, that will do it for today's Corolla Classics. Make sure to tune in tomorrow for Sunday's show, and we'll see you there. My name's Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Well, and get it on.